Hello, I'm Will Yeoman, CEO of Writing WA, and welcome to another episode of Pod Street, the official Writing WA podcast. Now, it's my great pleasure to be talking today to author Brendan Ritchie, who has got a terrific new novel out, Iter Draconis. Very intriguing name, Brendan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, lovely to be on and having a chat about Iter Draconis, named after a binary star, actually, in the constellation of Draco, intriguing's a nice compliment for a title. I'm glad to hear that.
And look, we should say to listeners too, it's a great cover, isn't it? Are you happy with the cover design for the book?
Oh yeah, it's brilliant, isn't it? It's I guess that's something that you always cross your fingers about as an author, and other people with much more applicable skills take that job on. But I'm stoked. It's beautiful. It's simple and striking. And can't wait to see it in the shop.
Absolutely. Likewise. So the last time you and I caught up, which probably was. At the time of your debut novel, Carousel, isn't that right?
I have a memory of chatting to you inside Carousel, Will, dragging
which
you
was
there
quite alarming in itself, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very meta interview that one. But yeah, may well have been 2015, 2016 for my
geology. So by way of introduction, before we get stuck into talking about Iter Draconis, what have you been up to since?
Yeah, well, I guess a lot of figuring out life stuff, more so than as much writing as I would have liked. My wife and I have had two children since my second book, Beyond Carousel. Still working at Edith Cowan University, and have been kind of hammering away very spasmodically at the manuscript for Iter Draconis since probably 2018 potentially, in a very different way to how I wrote the first couple of books, which were very concentrated and had a little bit more space and time. And this one, because of the nature of all the other good things in life, I have just been getting to it when I've been able to. So very protracted writing process, and thankfully culminating with an award, obviously, but also publication, now. So I think five years, I suppose.
And we should have pointed that out. You are indeed the winner of the 2022 Dorothy Hewitt Award for an unpublished manuscript, which is terrific. So congratulations for that as well.
Yeah, thanks so much. It was a surprise, but a very good one.
Now, you're also based down south nowadays, is that right? Whereabouts are you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, a little town called Kawaramup, which is just north of Margaret River. I guess we're tree changers to an extent. We moved down. We have some family down south, and have decided to make that shift a couple of years ago, and took the what was the start of the manuscript with me when we moved down, and was able to finish it off. Down this way. So nice to be launching the book in Margaret River.
Readers and Writers Festival, which is coming up at the time of recording, in a few days, in fact.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, very exciting. It wasn't in part a desire to get away from shopping centres, was it?
Oh, look, I mean, I can see the link there. I feel like I almost missed them a bit now. That's kind of ironic, isn't it?
I honestly can't imagine that, Brendan, but fair enough.
But, yeah, no, I mean, they're literally a long way from my subconscious now, Will. So this is, it's interesting, isn't it?
You've worked through it, and you've come out the other side.
Yeah, that's right. Two books, that'll do. So, yeah, interesting.
So, Iter Draconis. Look, I was fortunate enough to read the pre-publication version, and it's such a great book. I mean, so many different ways, and I guess there's a lot to talk about. But first and foremost, I should ask you if you're able to give our listeners a very brief summary so they get an idea of what they can expect.
Yeah, sure. It's effectively a road story, I guess. Iter Draconis follows two sisters setting out from their hometown in Esperance to drive the long road to the city in Perth to start the new university semester. So one of the sisters close to the end of her studies and the other one heading up to start hers. However, the narrative is set against the backdrop of a decade-long and quite a violent meteor event, not one of our known and gentle and beautiful meteorite showers that we know of, but a procession of heavy metal, quite small but quite violent heavy metal objects that has been pummeling the planet for kind of almost 10 years prior to the story starting, and people have learnt to live with this phenomenon in the hope that one day it will end, and the sisters set out to the city with that hope, I guess, hoping that, you know, that they can get into their studies and map out a life for themselves that maybe one day won't be interrupted and kind of lived within the kind of framework of this event, and we kind of follow their journey effectively. That's probably my best summary.
No, you're absolutely right, and I think it's really interesting because I'm feeling like you've got Carousel Beyond Carousel now, way beyond Carousel, and I also think that certainly this kind of road trip, which takes place in a sort of dystopian landscape, I suppose, is very Cormac McCarthy as well, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean that's great to hear. I at some stage along, I'm a fan of Cormac McCarthy. I've read The Road many, many times and still kind of dip into it every now and again. More so just for the for the sentence and the voice, you know, to kind of remind myself of how good writing can be, and hopefully in a way that's not intimidating and inspiring instead. But I think, you know, like I think there's some parallels there. It's a particularly isolating journey for these sisters, and quite an existential one when they start to grapple with, I guess whenever we talk about the future, but when questions are posed about the future in a global sense and even in relation to the universe, then it was really interesting to be able to have a go at answering or at least considering some of those questions, but within the from the perspective of a young protagonist, a couple of young protagonists.
Absolutely, and I think the vehicle, pun intended, of a road trip it enables you to explore the inner and outer tensions, doesn't it? Because you've got the inner tensions, and there are a lot of them between these two sisters, Elora and Vivian, but also the exterior tensions, you know, the menaces coming from without as well, and the meteor showers, not the only one, as it turns out. Did you feel like... this kind of narrative does lend itself to exploring those kinds of inner and outer tensions?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's always good. It's always reassuring as a writer, I find, to have a sense of velocity and momentum, I guess, in relation to the narrative. Given they have such a simple and clear goal or motivation from the first chapter, it's nice to have that as a structure during the writing process, particularly I found when it becomes protracted and it takes several years to kind of dip in and out of to actually finish. The other, as you mentioned, alongside that is this notion of how will the characters evolve and in what shape will they be when they finally arrive, if they do, and how do the places and the events they see along the way mark them. So, I feel like you're kind of wrapping up potentially something quite large into the framework of just a couple of days here, and it's quite an interesting and exciting place to be as a writer, I feel.
Mm. It's interesting too when you think about trajectory and whether it's in part something that's mapped out or it's something that it's serendipitous and it occurs to you as you write, and I'm supposing it's a mixture of those two things. But I really, really loved the ending, and of course we shouldn't talk about it, but it was both beautiful and surprising. Is that something that came to you naturally?
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, that's one of my I've been crossing my fingers about that ever since I put a full stop on it and wondering how people would go. I feel like there was some polarized opinions in relation to that in my previous books, but maybe that's a good thing as well. But yeah, no, I'm more of a I'm less of a planner than a pantser. I guess I generally try and start with something quite structured in relation to what I know the characters are after and their motivation, and then I'll let that drive things and try not to get in the way of it too much. So the ending was kind of similar. You know, I figured I had some things that I thought probably would need to happen or should happen given what I'd set in motion. Obviously, if you're writing a road story then with a destination, then there's probably a somewhat of an assumption that there'll be an arrival at some point, but but maybe not. I'm not sure. So geographically was interesting because obviously you know where they're headed. You tend to know how long ish that would normally take, and you know, so there's probably an expectation among the readers that you'll have of a similar outcome. I'm sort of tripping over myself here, trying not to give away the ending. But
exactly.
But yeah, right. No, it was a really lovely process to discover where these characters needed to go and how they needed to change and grow both individually but also as a pair of sisters as a result of all of the things that were happening around them. And so that was kind of my main priority. Let's take them on a really interesting arc and whatever happens narratively should simply be a reflection of you know how they're growing and as people as well.
Mm. I mean, the other fascinating thing, and this is as much for international readers as it is for local readers, is this idea of the landscape as another character. And I know you've got a background as a filmmaker too, so there is that very, you know, substantial visual element, particularly when you're describing the landscape and we're talking about, I guess, the gold fields and the wheat belt regions of Western Australia, which is they're such unique landscapes, aren't they, in their own right? Is that something you were very conscious of as well?
Yeah, I totally agree. So I actually grew up taking this pretty much the same road trip, sans the meteorites.
Thankfully,
I spent my childhood in Esperance. We travelled to Perth relatively regularly to visit family, or you know, to kind of see a bit more of the world, I guess, and. You know, I have vivid memories of the landscape and the towns along that journey. You know, I could name the towns and the order that they come and you know the aesthetic of each one. You travel from Esperance to Perth, and you start out in quite bleak farmland for a while, and before some rolling hills, and then you sort of skirt around the edge of the Stirling Ranges, depending on you know the route you take, and end up in some spectacular salt lakes, and then we start to kind of undulate into the quite thick forest eventually, prior to sort of descending down into Armidale. So for a child, particularly, that was a really magical snapshot of the state. I think a state that maybe sometimes we assume all looks the same, and that wasn't the case for me. So I really wanted to capture that, and this notion that that travelling somewhere for the first time or the first few times, in Alora's case, you know, is a is tied up in all kinds of things like discovery and growth and understanding and seeing and experiencing the world for the first time. And yeah, that was great. It just became a bit of a vehicle for me to write about something that that I have a strong memory of from childhood. And then, you know, meteorites, existential kind of questions, drama, conflict, all those things, you know, become part of the journey as well. But I guess probably not, maybe not the starting point.
No, that's a really good point. And I do love those ways that some of our formative experiences stay with us and you know, emerge or re-emerge in such surprising ways. It's quite
yeah, it is
fun.
It's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah, and very useful, as it turns out.
Yeah.
You talk about this. This is existential notions, and I didn't mention, but many people will know that you're ostensibly a YA writer, YA fiction. But of course, these are the kinds of books that anyone of any age can read. Is it important for you not to sort of overplay that hand and characterize yourself too much as this or that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure an agent would be conscious of that, and probably something that I should spend a little bit more time thinking of. But I tend to just arrive back at this point that that I find it quite hard and challenging to write full stop. So my main goal is just to find something that I'm engaged with enough to kind of see through till the end, and hopefully will be, you know, good enough to be published. Coincidentally, that so far has been three stories, or almost effectively two stories, with the duology with Carousel and Beyond Carousel, centered on characters kind of either in their late teens or early 20s. That by definition will pop you into the YA readership, which is fantastic. People are so passionate about young adult books. I know that they have had, you know, great. There's been great conversations about my previous books as to whether they, you know, fit neatly or they don't fit neatly into that particular, you know, category. I don't know. I guess I'm just happy to be able to finish work and share it with the world. As to whether that. I don't imagine that will mean that I'll only ever write about characters of this demographic. I think it's just where I've landed so far. I find it really interesting, particularly Alora in Ida Draconis, coming straight out of high school, trying to figure out what she wants to do in her life when she's getting pushed and pulled by many things. There's a great tension to that, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because you do pick up those labels as a writer, and I wouldn't feel comfortable in either way as being considered a contemporary fic writer or a YA writer. If you had asked me what's coming next. I've got no idea, really. I have things that I'm really interested in, but how they manifest and what they'll end up being considered as by the rest of the world, I guess, is something that I'll just have to navigate when I get there.
Yeah, look, I think it's simply a case of thinking of yourself as a writer first and foremost that just happens to be writing in this space at this time.
I think that's a good way to look at it. There's a lot of books that I've really cherished in the past, to Kill a Mockingbird or Catcher in the Rye, that I guess, you know, if you want to kind of analyze them in a certain way, you could certainly make an argument to say that they were a YA text, and there's plenty of others that aren't. So I'll just kind of hopefully continue to produce things and see where we go. But hopefully there's not too many agents around the place that are cringing hearing that. I'm not sure. It's a tricky business.
It is, but I'm glad you mentioned those classic texts, I mean, which were effectively YA books avant la lettre, as they say. But you're absolutely right. Why tie yourself down in those kinds of ways? Very useful for marketing, of course, and characterization, but not so great for the creative process, I suppose. I wanted to touch on the idea of the so-called pandemic novel, which has almost become a subgenre in the past. And there are certainly aspects or elements, not maybe in the subject matter, but certainly in part of the process of writing this book that could put you into that camp. And I just want to give a quick plug to my favourite pandemic novel, which was Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. I'm sorry, guys, it's not Australian. But it was just, for those of you who don't know Clarke, her great book was Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which was made into a great TV series as well. Her book was sort of so surreal and strange, kind of set in this parallel universe where you were stuck in this infinite sort of, number of halls and vestibules, which sort of like neoclassical, and I guess it's where the Piranesi thing comes off. But it's really weird. I can't even describe it. But anyway, I'm getting carried away. It's definitely my favourite pandemic novel. I'm wondering if you kind of felt that this was going to be something like that, and whether there were certain issues that you're addressing that were kind of metaphors or analogies for the pandemic.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question, isn't it? And I guess maybe I'd probably start with saying that, however the pandemic inadvertently or more directly shaped this novel, and I'm very proud of the novel. It's just a novel, and the pandemic, is obviously a whole other kettle of fish that I really hope that everyone is able to navigate the best that they can. But for me, it was. I did start writing this, I think, 2018, and I'm not exactly sure. I've thought about this a few times. At what point I was at when 2020 rolled around? I feel like there was a fair bit of the narrative still to unravel. But I did immediately sort of have a moment, which can be kind of horrific sometimes as a writer, that a lot of the things that I was speaking about were kind of were manifest around me a little bit, in that, the characters in Ida de Conis, it's quite an insular world. People don't tend to travel much. They shelter behind shutters a lot of the time, in fear of shockwaves that can, be quite dangerous. The notion of air travel is effectively finished. Our kind of ability to communicate with people isn't as it was prior. So there's I immediately noticed some of those parallels, and then sort of had a moment where I was like, okay, well, what's the best way forward here? I sort of continued on. I think, but it was probably helpful at that stage to have not mapped out a narrative structure very, very stringently. I felt like I had a bit of room to move still, and maybe not more time to write, but certainly a little bit more space away from some of the normal commitments that we all have in our lives. I was writing at night for most of the journey with Ida de Conis, just because of work and parenting. So I just kind of doubled down onto what I thought was the heart of the story and what I was really trying to explore. I had some really strange and interesting moments. I remember at one point there's a bit of a running joke in our house that my favourite day of the week is bin day, when we get to take our trash out. I'm not sure why, it's just become a bit of a thing. So I was taking the rubbish out during lockdown, which was, one of the times you get to go to the edge of the street, I guess, a little bit. And I remember seeing a plane come in quite low over our house, which is very unusual at the time because we're not on a flight path. We're living down south at this stage, and we didn't really have a lot of air travel at all there. I think it might have been a FIFO plane that was diverted slightly due to weather, and it just sort of struck me almost as if the first time I'd seen a plane in the sky for quite some time. And I had a kind of a moment where I sort of felt a little bit aligned with the characters at that stage in the book. There's actually a moment similar-ish to that in Edra de Conis at some point, where they catch that in the sky and kind of it sticks out to them as something that used to be completely normal, completely regular occurrence. As very striking and unusual because the world is transformed. So there's quite a few of those that end up in Edra de Conis because the world is in such a state of flux. And for Alora, the first time she sees a crater, for instance, in the ground, things like that, even though she knows that they exist, are particularly defining in her journey. And so little moments like that, I think, were I don't know how I'd describe them other than sort of that unusual symbiotic relationship between a writer and their work and the world around them, trying to follow those intersections in an interesting and creative way rather than shut yourself off. You know, I was kind of conscious to not just work in too much of a vacuum, even though we were in very unstable times. Just make sure I got to the finish line. You know, I think it's very easy with long form work and when life becomes very difficult and complicated to not keep getting back to the desk. So I was invested in that, thankfully was able to finish off and also very grateful to be able to now have a book out and launch a book in an environment where we can do that again in person, which is absolutely lovely.
Yeah, it's interesting.
That was a big long answer for you.
Oh, no, it's terrific. So many insights in there, and I think particularly that idea when you talk about the plane in the sky, that for a lot of people during the pandemic and whether they were locked down or not, otherwise ordinary things took on a different resonance, didn't they? They suddenly became, they were rendered strange. And I think you pick that up in some of those descriptions in your book as well.
Yeah, thank you. That's probably, that's a much more succinct way to put it. the ordinary is certainly, it's a very, I find it really interesting to write about place and but in a way where things are potentially not operating as they might otherwise, you know, if I had to kind of boil it down in a simple way. So to be able to describe the salt lakes that I have so many memories of driving through, but in a completely different context with a completely different kind of narrative function is a really, really cool place to be as a writer.
Absolutely. And which, for readers who are not at all familiar with our environment here in Western Australia, they will literally be very, very odd and surreal and strange by default almost.
Yeah, I think so. That's the other thing. I guess we maybe, particularly when we're talking from our own background and memory, it's an important reminder I find it useful to keep telling myself, well, these are things I've seen many times over, but people will be encountering them for the first time via these words. So, you know, that's an important part of writing place well, I think, to kind of remember that the details are important, to try and transport people there if you can, all those kinds of things.
Absolutely. It's one of the primary skills of a good novelist, isn't it? Well, Brendan, thank you so much for joining us here on Pod Street. It's been so good to finally catch up with you after all this time. Good luck in Margs. Good luck with the book, and congratulations again on such a a very thought-provoking read as well as being entertaining. Very, very much in the road trip genre, and very compelling for all that. But look, just in general, best of luck for the future, and hopefully I'll run into you again pretty soon.
Thanks so much, Will. Real pleasure to chat. Thanks for your kind words on the book. I'm really glad to hear it, and just excellent to not be talking inside a busy shopping centre this time around. Yeah, many thanks.
Absolutely. No, well, thank you.